Today, I'm going to go over a little bit about what we talked about last week, just as a refresher. Was everybody here last week? No. Okay. So, good plan, huh? And then we're going to talk about Buddha nature today. And some other things if we have time. The thing I really want you to remember about these teachings again is that the aim of them is to support your practice life. It's not about building abstract concepts. It's about how do you actually make these alive for you in your day-to-day life. So it's a practical orientation. Zen is a very practical tradition, even though it might seem like, really? It's really aimed to wake you up. So I'm going to talk a little bit about emptiness, dependent co-rising, and no-self, and then we'll talk about Buddha nature. So the term emptiness, as we talked about before, means empty of separateness, empty of permanence, empty of isolation. We say empty of inherent existence. So inherent existence means something is permanent and fixed and has its own. It's like a little pod that's separate from everything else, right? It's isolated. It's separate. It's like, and the term emptiness means nothing is like that. No matter how hard you look, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, you will never, ever, ever find something that's totally on its own side, as we say. Having an inherent existence that's unaffected by everything else. So it's not a negative term. It doesn't mean like an empty glass or a hollow, empty feeling. It means empty of separateness. So this is another way of saying this other term, which is dependent co-arising. Dependent co-arising. What that means is that everything arises together. When this arises, that arises. At the ceasing of this, this ceases. So this again is not difficult to see in our life, right? If we look around, we can see that everything is related to everything else. This is really in our face right now in our world, right? Everything is related to everything else. So if you look at the example I used last week was a lettuce leaf. If you look at a lettuce leaf, the earth, the air, the person that cultivated that, the water that allowed it to grow, all of that is present in that lettuce leaf. We call this interbeing, interconnectedness, complete mutuality, intimacy, relationality. All of these terms remind us that innumerable causes and conditions, innumerable factors coming together each moment make the reality that we are and make each thing what it is. Another example I like to use, a couple of them, one is a stone arch. Okay? If you see a stone arch, it's made up of stones. Correct? That's why it's a stone arch. But if you took each of those stones out and looked at it, is that the arch? No, that one stone is not the arch. It's all the stones coming together in a particular way that create an arch. So this is the process of existence. Another example is a cloud. We look at a cloud. It's made up of water, wind. I saw this wonderful program about this, how wind affects everything. Everything comes together to make that cloud. The cloud is real. If it rains, we get wet, right? So emptiness and dependent co-rising do not mean that things don't exist. They exist. It's just how they exist. And we're a part of this. So if we see a pile of stones configured in a certain way, we call it arch. Right? We call it arch. We perceive it. We slot it into our experience in a certain way, and we often have a lot of associations with it. It might be a medieval arch, and we think about the monks that live there. It might be a garden arch. It could be lots of things. So our perceptual apparatus is a part of this. It's a part of calling into existence our world. Our culture, our past experiences, all are inextricably woven into what we see in our world. So a little furry creature runs towards us, and we think dog. And we might be happy, or we might be frightened, or we might be irritated, or we might be curious. That's the dog of our consciousness. It's not separate from us and everything we attribute to it. Nor is it separate from the creature that's walking towards us. It all comes together. And each thing is empty of any separateness. The third factor that we talk about is impermanence, change. Everything lacks permanence. Everything changes. It's easy to see this, right? We're not the same person we were 10 years ago. Santa Cruz is not the same place it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. My grandparents moved here in 1957, I think. It was a different town in 1957. I was a little kid, right? So things change, and things change like that. Moment, moment, moment. When we sit zazen, when we sit down, look at our minds, right? It's like whoosh, moving, moving, moving. So these are the dimensions of our life. Empty of inherent existence, empty of separateness, dependently co-arisen, always changing. And this is true about us, too. We say everything lacks self. Self meaning separateness. This is the teachings of no self. So you probably heard about no self. It does not mean a self does not exist, just as a dog exists, a lettuce leaf exists, a cloud exists. Things exist, for sure. But they don't exist separately or permanently. So we too lack a fixed, isolated, permanent self. We too are in dynamic flux like the rest of the world. Doesn't mean that we don't refer to ourselves. Buddha referred to himself quite frequently in a very ordinary way. Does not negate our existence. It tells us something about how we exist. When we realize our interdependence, we're freed from isolation. We can see more clearly. We can respond more effectively. Our suffering, Buddha teaches, comes from the clinging to an isolated or permanent sense that is just not the way the world works. So we're fighting reality all the time. We are dependent. All reality is interdependent, more deeply than we can even imagine. And the more we taste that truth, the more we stay close to these teachings, the more our intimacy with life opens up, our heart opens up, our compassion and our clarity. We see things more clearly. There's a kind of vigor to it. Dogen gives an example of this. So I'm going to read you a little quote here. This is from a fascicle he wrote called Zenki, Undivided Activity. He says, life is, for example, like people sailing in a boat. Although we set sail, steer our course, and pull the boat along, the boat carries us, and we do not exist apart from the boat. By sailing the boat, we make the boat what it is. He says, study this assiduously. At such a time, there is nothing but the world of the boat. The heavens, the water, the shore, all become the boat's time. Hence, I make life what it is. Life makes me what I am. In riding the boat, one's body and mind, the self and the world, are together the dynamic function of the boat. The entire earth and the whole sky are in company with the boat's vigorous exertion. Such is the I that is life, and the life that is I. So he's giving us an example of a boat is made a boat by the water that it sits on, by us sailing it, by the wind, by the earth, by the sun. This dynamic activity is the nature of who we are, and it's what makes each thing what it is. When we remember this, we're much, much more aligned to the world. When we forget it, we become frozen. We become rigid. And we cause harm because we're not awake to reality. So it's like if we understand ourselves to be this complete embeddedness, then we give life to our lives and we give life to others. So these dimensions come together, and we focus on them in terms of emptiness, no self, dependent co-arising. But there's another way to talk about this. There's another way to talk about it that we call Buddha nature. So to our ears, often Buddha nature sounds like a kind of soul or an essence. Yeah? If everybody agree? It can sound like, oh, there's something I'm going to find there. Some center to our spiritual faculties. But that's not what it is. It's a way of speaking. Buddha nature is a way of speaking that attempts to bring us a subtle truth about who we are, how we are, and what we can be. This is not easily grasped. It messes with us in a way, these teachings of Buddha nature. So one of the ways to kind of begin to feel our way into this is to remember a statement that Dogen, Ehe Dogen made in his fascicle in the Shobogenzo Busho, Buddha Nature. That's the name of the fascicle, Buddha Nature. And in it, he reinterprets a Chinese character from the Mahaparinirvana Sutra. And he shifts the meaning of a statement. So the statement was, all beings have Buddha nature. All beings have Buddha nature. This is already a pretty profound statement. All beings have Buddha nature. Not the good, not the bad, you know, not just the good people, or what we perceive as good people, not just people, but all beings have Buddha nature. And in the Chinese tradition, this was extended to everything. Not just people, not just dogs, but everything. Everything is alive. But Dogen took it a step further, and he said, it's not that all things have Buddha nature. It's that all things are Buddha nature. So the fact that all things are Buddha nature, come on in, Raoul, have a seat. Shifts our sense of things, right? So if we say we have something, that's a statement of duality, a statement of possession, right? We possess a job, we have a job, we have a house, we have an experience, we have a relationship, we have an idea. In that world, there's a me, and then there's this other thing that I possess. If we say we are something, that's different, isn't it? So we say we are human. We are alive. That separation dissolves, doesn't it? There's a different feeling about being something and having something. So what is this something that we say, well, what is Buddha nature? This is a great question. This is a koan, right? This is a question that we can live with for years on end. What is Buddha nature? What is Buddha nature? It's a question that pushes us into categories of is and is not, right? When we ask what something is, we presume it's a what. And we often, that what is an it. But the teachings of Buddha nature say, uh-uh, you can't really go into those categories of is and is not. You're going to miss something. It's not quite right, not quite appropriate. But if we ask that question, we start to develop a relationship with the teachings. We start to develop a relationship. We gain an understanding, and then we fail. And then we gain an understanding, and then we fail. And we keep at it, and we keep at it, and we keep at it. And as we do that, our practice deepens, our understanding deepens. But to do that, we have to be able to tolerate ambiguity. We have to be able to tolerate paradox, contradictions. We need to be alive in something in a way that allows us and that question and what we're studying to change. This is practice. This is a life of practice. A life of practice is a life of openness, a life of, as I said last week, a Zen practice is filled with fierce questioning. Fearless questioning. What is it? What is it? What is Buddha nature? How is Buddha nature? So, in a text called the Buddha Nature Treatise, which comes, I have to say, from if for those of you that are a little more geeky and are interested in this, from a tradition called the Tathagata Garbha tradition. Ta-ta-ta, or Tathagata, is the Buddha potential. Buddha. And Garbha is womb. So Tathagata Garbha means potential for Buddhahood and the womb, the supportive conditions to realize the teachings. So in this Buddha Nature Treatise, it begins with a very straightforward statement. Buddha nature really truly exists. Buddha nature really truly exists. This is a positive statement. It's a kind of, if you keep close to this and you keep close to the emptiness teachings that says everything's fluid, everything's dynamic, everything's interdependent, you can have a relationship with it that doesn't kind of succumb to our desire to put everything into a category, straighten it all out, get it all tidy, and say, okay, I got that. I know that. I know what Buddha nature is. to say Buddha nature really truly exists is an invitation to investigate this dynamic process that Dogen Zenji is talking about. Not to identify an essential core that's permanent, fixed, and separate, like a soul. We have to expand our categories of thinking. This treatise also says, Buddha nature is the thusness revealed by the dual emptiness of persons and things. Okay, you with me on this? Buddha nature is the thusness revealed by the dual emptiness of persons and things. So think about the dual emptiness of persons and things. This is this dynamic activity, right? If you are an empty, dependently arisen dynamic process, and these things, what we observe as things, which exist, but are also a dynamic, dependently arisen process, then that's what's happening, isn't it? It's just this, it's just this, it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this. Things exist, and the dual emptiness of persons and things means there's what's happening is this dynamic activity that we call thusness, Buddha nature. Buddha nature is the thusness revealed by the dual emptiness of persons and things. And thusness is another word for tata. Tathagata garbha, thusness womb. Conditions of thusness, emptiness, Buddha nature. The Chinese word for thusness is ru, which means like as much as. So it's an adjective. It's pointing towards qualities and actions, not things. It's a descriptive word. It's not a noun. It refers to how something is rather than what it is. Thusness is a word, as one of my favorite authors, Sally King, says, is a word in which words are undone. For those of you that want to get a little geeky about this, there's a word called apophatic. It's often used in Christian theology. Apophatic and cataphatic. Apophatic means negation. Not. Stripping away from us. This is a lot of what the teachings of emptiness do. Don't land on anything. Don't land. Stripping away our set ideas about things. Cataphatic is a positive language. We could say Buddha nature is like that. But thusness is a word that undoes words. So to equate Buddha nature with thusness and the dual emptiness of persons and things is to say that something real exists. Remember, the Buddha Nature Treatise says Buddha nature really, truly exists. But also to remind us that any idea that we have a fixed essence that arises when we hear the terms such as real or exist isn't quite accurate. It keeps us awake. I would say that Dogen's teachings a lot of times are like, this is predates Dogen, but kind of like whenever you land on a rug, he pulls the rug out from under you over and over and over again. I think any good sacred literature does this. And so you have to learn to fly through the air. You know, you have to get comfortable, right? To get comfortable in the air. He asks us to kind of, these teachings ask us to dive into reality. And this means quite ordinary reality. We're not talking about something necessarily very special here. Cleaning your bathtub, right? How many people love to clean their bathtub? Anybody? Raoul, yes. You know, scrub, scrub, scrub. That's ultimate reality right there. Greeting your neighbor who's going to tell you the same story for the 40th time, or gripe about the person across the street, going to work, sitting down at your computer again, answering emails, worrying about whether your grandmother's being cared for adequately, all of those things. That's ultimate reality right there. Nothing else. So Dogen is asking us to dive into these teachings and realize them quite immediately. There's this story, one of my favorite stories. For those of you that have, probably some of you have heard this before, but this is an encounter between two monks who are good friends, Shir Kung and Si Tang. There's a lot of stories in Zen about buddies that help each other wake up. That's what we're doing here, right? We're buddies helping each other wake up. So Shir Kung says to Si Tang, "Can you grasp emptiness?" Si Tang replies, "Yes, I think I can." Shi Kung asks, "How would you grasp emptiness?" Si Tang grasped the air with his hand. Shi Kung is not satisfied with this response. And so Shi Tang says, "How would you grasp emptiness then?" Shi Kung reaches over and grabs a hold of Shi Tang's nose and, right? Ouch! Shi Kung says, "You can grasp emptiness only in this way." So this is this immediacy, right? Shi Tang is grasping the air with his hand. That's kind of like lame in a way, isn't it? It's like, oh, right, this is emptiness. I'm going to grasp it. I can't really grasp it. I mean, it's a sweet response. It's a wonderful response in a way, but it's not a lie. Yeah. This is immediate. This is a lie, right? A hurt nose. That's boom. So Dogen says on this koan, that which grasps and that which is grasped are all one and the same emptiness. Emptiness grasps emptiness. We could also say that in that immediacy of ouch, something is revealed, something is experienced, something is realized, something comes alive. It's not constrained by fixed ideas or abstractions, right? This is not abstract. This is quite real. So emptiness, thusness, Buddha nature are all as concrete and immediate as a hurt nose. Day by day, scrubbing the bathtub, answering the telephone, checking your email, putting your phone down and taking a walk, which I advocate strongly, by the way. These are the things. This is the venue, this is the Buddha field, we say, in which we wake up. So, Dogen states, this life, this world, is Buddha nature. And he says, nor is there a second existence other than this universe. This is important for us, because so often we can think we should be someone else, we should live somewhere else in order to wake up, right? We should have some we should be endlessly patient and kind or serene or be able to sit in full lotus or, you know, pick your poison there. And that's what it is poison. But he's saying there is no second universe other than this universe. This is it. And this is Buddha nature. So these teachings of Buddha nature really, they give us a positive language. They invite us to name things in a certain way. To call ourselves, our lives, and the lives of all others, Buddha nature. So even though the teachings of emptiness and dependent co-arising tell us constantly, don't get fixed on names. Don't get fixed on concrete things. Don't create these categories and entities that are at war with reality. Wake up to the changing nature of reality. But we also do name things. Dogen uses the character show a lot. And it means our name and our nature. He says, I am thusness, and you are thusness also. Thusness is our name and our nature. So I want you to consider what happens in your mind and your heart and your life when you regard your life and everything you encounter as Buddha nature. It doesn't mean that everything becomes special. Except for Raoul, you still might not want to scrub your tub. But what happens if you scrub your tub with the attitude that the brush, the tub, the water, and you are Buddha nature? And that activity is the enactment of Buddha nature. What happens when we regard our life and the lives of others in this way? This is their kind of curiosity, openness, stumpedness, like, what? This makes no sense to me. That's okay. It doesn't have to make sense. When we give this, when I am thusness, you are thusness also. I am empty, I'm in existence, a dynamic activity, so are you. I am Buddha nature, so are you. We are all in this together. When we give this to each thing and being in our life and we give it to us, our lives open up. We can live in paradox and welcome fluidity. Suzuki Roshi said, the world is its own magic. The world is its own magic. And there's no need to add anything extra to this. Our quite ordinary lives are pretty dynamic, and they are a Buddha field. So, we're going to name things. Show, name in nature. Human beings do this. What do we name things? And how fixed are we in our identity of what that name is? I mentioned this last week, but I'd like to revisit this for a moment. The story of Nelson Mandela and names. So Nelson Mandela has given name, and I'll probably mess this up quite terribly, Roli Lala. It's got some extra H's in there, but Roli Lala, that was his first name, and it means troublemaker. Right? That was his childhood name. And then when he went to school, he was given the name Nelson. And then when he went through initiation rites when he was 16, he was named Dalibunga, which means convener of dialogue. And then in his 20s, he joined the African National Congress and became very involved, as you all know. And he was arrested a number of times and sentenced to life in prison. While he was in prison for 27 years, he was known as number 46664. So for 27 years, his name was stolen from him, and he was called a number. The government of South Africa at the time was intent on erasing him, erasing who he was and his significance. But his name remained alive outside of the prison walls. And he remembered his name. He remembered who he was. He did not become 46664, even though I'm sure he responded to it when he needed to. So after decades in prison, he was released, as you know, and he went on to work for peace and reconciliation. But one of the things that we can learn from his life is the importance of name, the importance of what we call each other, what we call ourselves, what we call bathtubs, what we call coffee cups, what we call computers, what we call coworkers, what we call our environment. What we call these things matters. It tells us something, what we call things. What we call things and how we regard things, even in the privacy, perhaps especially in the privacy of our own minds and hearts, transforms our world. Are we a world of connection and mutual respect? Or do we call things a number? Is the scrub brush in my hand Buddha nature? Or is it just a thing to be tossed away? Do we pick up things with gratitude and respect, or do we dispose of them? This is what happens when we come close to such a thing as the teachings of Buddha nature. It keeps us awake and alive and respectful and in dynamic relationship with everything, and tells us something about how to have that, how to experience and be that relationship with integrity and dignity and aliveness. So we can let our names, our sho, slip away, or we can let our lives slip away, or we can take these teachings and eat them. I say we should eat the teachings. St. Benedict says you should eat the teachings, eat the scripture. You should eat the scripture so much that when you burp the scripture. So we want to eat these teachings. It becomes part of our body, you know, so that when we're going about our daily lives, these things guide us, teach us, remind us how we want to be with ourselves and others. Show our nature and our name, empty of inherent existence, full of mutuality, aliveness, connection, Buddha. So when we do that, we're not so easily fooled by circumstances. We're not so easily colonized by dominant narratives, as we say. We hear our name and we give others a name that reflects our deepest wish, right? What do we really want? For ourselves and all beings to be free from suffering? So when we do this, we're expressing our Buddha nature. And all, you know, the whole world comes alive. So we say, this is Buddha practicing Buddha's way. When, with kindness and awareness, we return to the teachings, we return to our lives, we return again and again and again and again. That is the activity of a Buddha. That is awakening. Right there. Right there. Scrubbing the bathtub. Answering the telephone. No need for anything special. So this is the kind of attitude towards our lives that brings us alive and brings other lives and keeps us close to these transformative teachings. Because again, even when we go off into all this, the point of the teachings is to deepen our practice, is to encourage us to make this alive. We sit down, as I said, when Katagiri Roshi said, you know, when you look around as a human being, when you look around and pay attention, you might want to sit down for a little while. Very simple. We sit down for a little while. Then we get up, clean the bathtub, go to work, call a friend that just had ankle surgery. All of those things, every bit of them, is the dignified activity of a Buddha, is an expression of these teachings of Buddha nature. So I think I'll stop there for today, and then next week I'll go on to talk about what we call practice realization and the Bodhisattva path. So thank you. Please bring me your questions. Any questions that